Welcome to our next episode of the 5 Moments of Need AI Matters podcast series. This is Chris King, one of the co-hosts you'll meet throughout the series. We aim to bring order and focus to the AI discussion in and around the L&D world, exploring how it aligns with frameworks like the 5 Moments of Need and content management. Throughout the coming months, we will be sharing both expert insights and real-life examples from practitioners. In this AI Matters podcast, Con Gottfredson and I sat down with Sarah Mercier, strategic consultant and CEO of Build Capable. Sarah's journey began in call center classrooms, where she learned that the whole purpose of L&D is to support on-the-job performance, or what we like to call the moment of apply. Sarah thinks that generative AI is uniquely positioned to replace training as we know it. We talked with her about how AI can save time, expand access to learning opportunities, and include people who have been historically marginalized. She also feels pretty strongly that we all need a healthy skepticism and lots of verification of AI-generated content. As an early adopter of technology, Sarah has witnessed both the good, the bad, and the ugly of AI in learning and offers practical advice for L&D professionals navigating this evolving technology. Hello, friends. Welcome. Today, we're talking with Sarah Mercier. She is the CEO of Build Capable, and she is here today to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly that's happening in the L&D world for AI. Sarah, you were telling us earlier that you are working on a book on a more universal design approach with a real focus on accessibility and inclusion. So tell us a little bit about you and how you got where you are today.
Yep.
Well, I'm the CEO and I'm a strategic consultant at Build Capable, and we work in the technology space. So for many, many years, I have been working in the field of workforce development, learning and development, training, whatever framing you want to give it. I've been very fortunate to work across many different industries and everything from K through 12 to higher ed to mainly working with organizations, mainly working with both for-profit and nonprofit organizations. And I've always gravitated toward technology. How can we use technology to teach people? But I started out as a classroom trainer. I started out as a classroom trainer and an international consultant working for an organization that did call center training. And so I had a lot of experience for about the first 9 or 10 years of my career going around and training people in call centers, hiring folks, training trainers, and never heard the words instructional design, never heard the words performance support, all of the fun things that we talk about in our field. I didn't use those words, right? We talked about teaching people and helping people do their jobs. We talked about, you know, things like documentation and simulations and weekly training and call center calibrations and helping people do their jobs. It was all focused on helping somebody learn something that they needed to be able to do a job or do a thing. And I fell in love with that. I fell in love with, in the classroom, working with people and noticing when they had that moment where everything clicked. And I'll just be honest, I think I'm addicted to that feeling. I think I'm addicted to that feeling of helping people learn something. And, you know, I started to use technology in the classroom and helping people learn using simulations in a classroom setting. And then I got addicted to e-learning and mobile learning and all of these different fun tools that we have to teach people. And so I've always been an early adopter of technology. And it was less about, ooh, look at this cool technology. And it was more about, oh, look at this thing that might be able to help somebody. And yeah. So I know we're here to talk about AI today, but that's another one of those things. It's another thing where I'm just endlessly curious about how I can help people have that moment where everything clicks. I don't care how they get it, right? It's the thing that works best for them. And how can we find that variety in how we teach people? It's just something that I'm in love with. I've done it my entire career. It's my thing. Even before I knew it was a job, it was a thing that I love doing. So that's a little bit about me.
Sarah, so with that background and all of the practical experience that you've had, that rich experience, as you look at the landscape, at what's going on with AI in the world of learning and development, What's the good and the bad and the ugly? Let's talk about that. Let's start with the good. What are you seeing that's good? And you can sprinkle the bad and the ugly in there as you see fit. But let's begin with what you see that's positive and good going on in the world of AI.
Absolutely. So I may have some opinions on that. And I know that this is a podcast, so you can't get my facial expressions, but I'm making some faces over here. I think that if we start with the good stuff about AI, the things that I get excited about where it can help save us time. I get excited about where it can help people that have historically been left out of learning opportunities. I get excited about being able to expand learning opportunities to people that may not be able to or have access to information in certain situations. I can talk a little bit about each of those. I think I can start off with the thing that everybody talks about, right? And that is we need tools that help us do our jobs more efficiently and faster and easier. And that's a given. That's the easy thing. And, you know, all of the sessions and talks and workshops seem to be gravitating around how can you make me more efficient as a designer, as an instructional designer, as a developer, as a MIA builder of things, a visual designer. What are the things that you can do, AI, to help me be better, be faster, do a better job, be more efficient? And I think that's a really interesting area to explore. And in our organization, we've done that. We have a great example of how on my team we've implemented that is by creating a questionnaire for subject matter experts, where we are prompting our subject matter experts essentially to say, tell us a little bit about yourself. And we've got a questionnaire that we share with folks that we've come up with this format where we can actually save subject matter expert time, which is something that everyone knows. If you've ever worked with a subject matter expert or someone where you had to pull information, it's very time consuming. And so working with large language models like ChatGPT, you can prompt those things, right? And you can start to create bots. You can just tap into those infrastructures and be able to get scenarios and all sorts of stuff. That's the thing everybody's talking about. And that's great. And I don't want to undermine it. And we use it. And I use ChatGPT to, check my spelling. We've been using AI and tools for years. And so, when I think about how we use it to be more efficient, it's great. And we can talk about some trade-offs in a minute. It's hard for me to separate this from good, bad, and ugly because I want to go straight to like the contrast.
No, why don't you do that?
Yeah,
the good and the bad and the ugly.
It makes it a more powerful example when you talk about non-example. Yeah.
For sure. So the downside of that is that you get really ChatGPT-y information. And anyone who's been playing around with this for the last, 6 months, year, knows what I'm talking about. You get ChatGPT will say things to you. Sometimes it's just wrong. Sometimes it's right, but it doesn't talk or say things like you would. And so I'll give you an example, and this is kind of the bad, right? I'll give you an example. So my partner is working with an organization that they've got a scholarship. And thousands of people have applied to the scholarship. And one of his jobs is to go through those scholarship applications and vet them. And he said, I can tell about 50% of these are ChatGPT. I don't have to check anything. They look the same. They say the same things. And he gave me a sentence that came from one of them. And it says, in the chaotic midst of crisis, time is our most precious commodity and efficiency is paramount. So it sounds like a fiction writer. That's what
said my no my, one ever. I mean,
my COO on my team, Teresa Dusso, said that it sounds like someone that is, a young adult fiction writer. It's like writing this stuff. And so when you get this stuff from AI, it's using words like paramount and profound and crucial and aspirational and not only will it and pivotal and things like that. It's the phrasing that you can tell it's ChatGPT. And I think we're starting to notice that. We're starting to notice just that rhythm that tools like ChatGPT have. Now, one of the things that we do is we use a couple of different tools in our organization. So we use ChatGPT and we use it to build bots and things like that that help us with scenario writing and that kind of thing. We also use Claude, which is an Anthropic tool. And Claude is another model, but Claude is built to be a more ethical AI model. So what we will often do is a comparison. I'll ask it a question. I'll do a comparison from ChatGPT and Claude and see what kind of stuff am I getting from each of these. And that's one thing that I recommend to people is when you're using AI, don't use one tool. Don't just use ChatGPT. You know, practice using a couple different tools. And I really like Claude mainly because my organization is one of our foundational tenets is around accessibility and inclusion and having an ethical approach to the way that we teach people. And so that is the bad side is that sometimes ChatGPT is going to be just outright wrong. Sometimes it's going to be weird. And it's going to be something that, in my experience, sometimes actually takes more time than if you'd just written it yourself. Sometimes it does not save me time. And I'm kind of getting my rhythm for the types of tasks for me personally that ChatGPT helps me do and things that cause me more time where I could have just written it myself. And then there's the ugly. And the ugly part of this is really getting into, you know, when outright wrong does harm. So when the answer is wrong and it causes me to do something wrong at work that could affect my income, that could affect the things that I'm trying to do, right? That could affect people with the outcome of whatever work I'm doing. We've seen plenty of examples of that in the news lately of people getting incorrect information from AI and how it's affected people, lawsuits that have come out of that. And so those are some of the pieces where sometimes if AI is wrong, it can actually be detrimental to whatever it is that you're trying to do. And so you really have to think about that. And it scares me that people right now are getting their information or they're asking for people in the L&D field for legal advice around this stuff. Like, help us come up with an AI policy. I don't think the L&D team needs to be coming up with your AI policy. I think your legal folks need to be working with folks in your organization to come up with your AI policy so they can make informed decisions. So it's not that we don't have a role, but that should not be centralized to us. That's not a thing we can make decisions about. We just know the types of things it might help us do. So I think that that's kind of the range of what I notice happening most often right now with AI is you've got people who are like, oh, this is so great. I can do things so much faster. Or, oh, that's not quite as great as I thought. Or, oh, this caused an actual huge issue for me and the work that I do. So that's one side of things. The other side of things that I notice for the work that I do, so you mentioned we talk about kind of like the good things, the good effects, and I am working on, I don't know how much I want to say about this right now, but I'm working on a book project that is really incredible that involves a lot of different folks. Can't wait for it to come out February 25. But that project has a focus on accessibility and inclusion. And I think AI is a huge opportunity to tap into the ability to support folks that have traditionally been marginalized or completely overlooked or completely left out of training altogether. And what I mean by that is AI can do things like help you write alt text, help you write in plain language. So simplifying how you provide instruction to folks. But it can also be a tool that someone who is blind can pick up and talk to. It can be a tool that helps us generate captions, right? It can be a tool that automates a lot of things that can be helpful for folks that have been traditionally just completely left out because of barriers that we put up for them. Because we design things for the person who is not blind, who is not deaf or hard of hearing, who is not on the autism spectrum. We design for this fictitious person that actually doesn't even really exist. And we make it harder for everyone else. And so what I'm really excited about with AI is the opportunity to remove some of those barriers in a way that is cost effective, that helps us do that a little bit better. But the bad side of that is that automated captions, are even the best ones, are usually around 10% wrong. And 10% wrong could tell you absolutely incorrect information, right? So are you really helping someone learn if you're using these automated tools and you're not checking them? So same thing that we were talking about before, am I checking this information and verifying that it's accurate? And so the bad side of that is that it can be really frustrating for folks that are using things like captions and transcripts and alt text, screen readers for alt text. I used, I did a little comparison the other day, and I had Claude and ChatGPT create alt text for me. So you can actually drop an image in and it'll spit out some alt text. Say, make me some alt text for this, write me some alt text. And what it gives you is kind of written like that example I gave you earlier, right? Like a young fiction writer, a young adult fiction writer. But the benefits of it is that if I had to create lots of image alt text, could I get a starting point for all of these and then edit them down? Yes, it can make me more efficient. I do have to check them. So it worries me when tool vendors and folks are putting automated tools in to automatically generate alt text, because what ends up happening is that the checkers that say alt text is missing are now noticing it's there, but it can't tell you if it's accurate, right? So some of those guardrails are going to start to fall down because we're just plopping stuff in there. And I have seen some folks post some stuff on social media and they're like, this is so cool. Check out this alt text that ChatGPT wrote for me. And it is a long paragraph of text. Now, here's the problem, y'all. Alt text has got to be short. It needs to be like around 100 characters. Some, you know, you'll get varying feedback, but different screen readers may cut it off after 125, after 140 characters, and it won't even read the rest of it. But ultimately, from a user experience perspective, you want to be succinct. You want to explain that image in as few words as possible that gets the point across and describes it for that person. Otherwise, you're getting into image descriptions and working it into your content. So if we're using AI for the stuff, AI doesn't appear to know that, right? Just like it doesn't know a lot of things. And so you have to evaluate that. Now, it can get to a point where the ugly is that, what if I am using AI to generate all these instructions and captions and tools and alt text, and what it's spitting out is absolutely wrong, but not just wrong, it is telling you to do something that could hurt you. Medicine dosages, things like directions to a certain location. Like, what if it's sending you off in the wrong, completely wrong area and you end up somewhere? Some of the things that we are getting out of these tools, if it's not checked, that's scary to me, right? That undermines the whole opportunity. And so I think that while I'm very excited about AI and what it can do, it also has some trade-offs. And I think as learning experience designers and trainers and facilitators and folks that are trying to help people work and do their jobs and learn something new, we have to be aware of this stuff. You need to play with the tools. You need to play around with them. You also need to have a healthy measure of skepticism about what the impact might be of using these tools. So it's that trade-off.
Yeah, you know, conversational AI, give some of that, holds out the promise of being able to give AI, your agent, feedback. Mm-hmm. But like you said, we have to be checking. We can put guardrails around, certainly, but ultimately, the bad and the ugly especially, you can't afford to give the wrong information, right? And so with all of that, in that checking, I had the other day, I was working on an agent and I was able to just simply give it feedback to say, that was way too long. You need to shorten that. And by the way, the structure of the content that we gave you can help you do that. So we've got to be smart in how we train and teach. Right.
Yeah. I think one of the scary things that I'm noticing right now is organizations laying off entire teams of trainers and their professional development. All of these big just massive layoffs. And they're like, we're going to get AI to do it for us now. That is terrifying. And I want to be clear that there's a difference between using generative AI and using ChatGPT, right? There are ways that you can train models to give you better information. There are ways that you can train it with your data to get information. I have a client right now that is really interested in, can we train a model to coach before, during, after training? Can we train this model to make recommendations on courses or curricula or resources? And the answer to those things is, of course you can. You can if you have the data to feed it. Do you have the content to feed it in a format that will train it? Like, so one of the things that I'm really interested in and following right now is how our roles are changing and the opportunities that we have to help train some of these models to help us do some of these things, especially performance support related things. And it can be better.
Yeah.
But it does require you teaching it that way. Like, you have to set it up that way and you have to test the crap out of it. Like, you can't just do it. And it's not a thing you just turn on. And I think people have a, and I'm not saying all people, I think most people are pretty skeptical, but you know, I think some people don't have a good understanding of some of the shortcomings of it. Cause when you play with it at first, you're like, wow, this is incredible. It does all kinds of cool stuff, you know, and what it actually takes to make that stuff work for you in a consistent way. And so I'm really interested in some of these things. And I'm just really terrified about how we're getting rid of the human element of a lot of these things that are still very, very human jobs. These are important things. Like, you have to know how to do this stuff. I was thinking about this need for this industry to create AI tools that create e-learning courses, right? That spit out courses. And I find that amusing that we took a technology that can answer a question. You can ask it a question and it will tell you the answer. But instead of framing it in a way that will help us do that, we said, you know what we could do? We could have it make us more courses.
Let's have it write some learning objectives and then we'll, yes.
It's so weird.
In reality, if you want to have AI replace you, you just use AI to do the old stuff.
Yeah.
Instead of rethinking, how can we do that? And one of the focus of a lot of AI work has been on just how do we use it to build the flawed training solutions that we've been building for years that aren't really delivering the kind of impact that the organization needs. Instead of turning our attention to performance, how do I enable effective job performance? How do I take advantage of this, of these marvelous technologies to enable effective performance on the job?
I actually learned something really interesting yesterday from an accessibility advocate, and he was describing this technology that somebody had made, and they were gloves that someone could wear if they speak American Sign Language. And if they are signing with those gloves, then allegedly this would translate to English, if you will, right? Translate it to text. And he called it, I believe the term that he used was an accessibility dongle. And he said, this is terrible. This is terrible because number one, it's not the responsibility of folks with disabilities to help you understand. Like, if you think about language, right? If I'm going to France, I either need to learn French or I need to get good with my little translation device, right? It's the onus is on me to understand that person. And I think about this from an AI perspective. Like, I think about it like an AI dongle, right? It's like, what are these things that we're trying to give people solutions to problems that don't exist, instead of using the technology to address problems in an innovative way? And so the problem is not how many courses you have. The problem is that people can't do a thing because there's a gap in information or skills and application or whatever. And so if you're trying to address that problem, making more courses doesn't solve that problem, right? Getting information to people in a format that's accessible to them and meaningful when they need it, that is an answer to that problem. That is one answer to that problem. But that, like, start thinking about those things, like how you're trying to solve problems that don't exist. And you're trying to solve them in ways that will actually cause more work for people. And it actually makes everything worse. And somebody will make a lot of money off of it, which is the whole accessibility dongle thing. It's like you're trying to make money off of something that is not, you're trying to solve a problem that is not a problem. And so it's frustrating to me whenever people do that and just not understanding what you're trying to do.
We're in that stage of technology where we're doing the things that we are comfortable and familiar with because we can't think of a better way to do them yet. And I always think about the transition to television from radio. And if you look at some of those old television shows, the original television shows, it's just a radio program with some cameras set up in front of everybody because they couldn't imagine a different way of doing it. And that's kind of where we are now. Sarah, you've got some really amazing thoughts about how people can communicate better and think better about how to use AI. And I wanted to dive a little bit deeper into this because, you know, you said the person using American Sign Language isn't responsible for communicating with everyone. So tell us a little bit more about your vision for where we can find those blue ocean places in AI and help us think differently about how we could be using this.
Absolutely. So the thing that I'm drawn to right now is definitely around accessibility and inclusion, because those are areas where I'm working. And I think it's an opportunity. So there's an opportunity and there's a risk. The opportunity is for us to find ways to include people that have been excluded. So one of the things that I'm working on right now and I'm really interested in is that 26% of people in the United States have a diagnosed disability. This is not a disability that, this doesn't mean only 26% of people have a disability. It means that 26% of people have a diagnosed or disclosed disability, right? And one of the most impactful pieces of statistics or pieces of research that I found was that of the disability community, of folks that have disabilities, they are in the lowest percentage of folks as far as economic status, right? As far as income, and are typically at below poverty level. And a big reason for that is that they can't get jobs. And a big reason that they can't get jobs is that we don't set up job environments for folks that have disabilities. And a big reason for that is that we don't know any better. And we set up processes and stuff that are actually not accessible to anybody, frankly. if you've applied for a job recently, you know exactly what that feels like. But we have excluded people. So a lot of folks will say, well, there's nobody in my organization that does this, or that is blind, that uses a wheelchair, that is deaf or hard of hearing. The reason why nobody in your workplace there's no one in your workplace is because you have excluded them intentionally, like, or unintentionally, but you have not created an environment where those folks can work. As a matter of fact, you probably didn't even create an application process where they could apply. And I think about this from a learning perspective and all of the advocates and folks that work in the accessibility space and how incredibly smart these folks are. Like, you're missing out on a talent pool that could equal like 20%+ of the population for reasons that you could solve. And some of the statistics that I found were that to accommodate folks with disabilities, most of the time is completely free. And when there is a cost associated, it's almost always less than $500 one-time expenditure. That is incredible numbers. And so I think about this from, remember I talked about my spark is helping people learn. And I think about, like, because I can't solve the world's problems, but I can focus on teaching people. And if I actually care about people learning, who am I to say that you can't learn to do this because of whatever? Because if I say, oh, well, nobody will ever do this job if they are blind, That's not true. Nobody will ever do this job the way you do it if they're blind. And same goes for other disabilities. Same goes for folks on the autism spectrum. There's plenty of research about all of these disabilities. And, you know, folks on the autism spectrum, there are folks that have way higher intelligence than, you know, your neurotypical person. And we're not even tapping into those folks because we're like, you don't fit this version of normal that I designed for. And so I think about this as a designer and what I care about. And when I think about what AI helps me do, is it helps me design opportunities for people to learn that reduce tons of barriers. Like, I don't have to think about making, you know, an e-learning course accessible if I can design an experience where you ask a question and it just gives you an answer, right? I use an app on my phone. Let's just say I train a GPT model to answer certain questions about a certain domain within my organization. So I've created an enterprise AI model. And someone who wants to learn this stuff could literally ask their device. And it could just tell them an answer. We're removing all sorts of barriers. And this isn't just with people with disabilities. I would like to be able to pick up my phone and say, hey, tell me about this. And it, you know, tell me how to program this course for XAPI, or tell me how to add this XAPI statement. And it would just tell me the answer. Why can't we think about things like that? Because not only is it helping us solve problems, but it's removing barriers that we're inadvertently putting in front of people literally all the time, no matter whether they have disabilities or not. But that's the thing that I'm caring about, you know, that I care about and that I'm advocating for and trying to get more people to think about. But it's just really like, how do we get this to people more quickly? And instead of saying, hey, we're rolling out this new software program and we need to make sure that everybody's trained on it. But y'all know, if you've ever rolled out a software system, the training folks don't get access to anything until the week before it's about to go out, and it's still buggy then. So how are you going to create training for that, right? Are there ways that we could use AI to train these models, this information faster, so that people could get performance support when you roll out the system? And then maybe you think about the way you structured that training differently. Maybe you think about the way that you are going to support folks a little differently in front loading, like, where can I meet the absolute, I will go to Ray Jimenez, who talks about trying to get information to people with targeting the errors. Instead of targeting like all of the things that you need to know, what are the highest error points? Yeah. Are the points where you're most likely to make mistakes? And so I just think about opportunities like that, like just being more practical about how we're using it.
So here's what I've learned from you today, and that you've just shared a remarkable example from your own life and your own passion of taking this technology and beginning to make a difference. And that's what we have to do. And I heard you say this. You said that you're looking to solve problems and remove barriers. And if we took that framework and just turned it at everything in our organization, where are the problems that I can solve? Where are the barriers that I can remove? That would take us to some really powerful places, wouldn't it? It would take us, move us beyond the status quo and just trying to use AI to deliver and do what we've always been doing, to new ways, innovative ways of doing things, to solve problems, to remove barriers. That's, to me, such an insightful model, if you will, a framework to look at things, you know? So thank you for that.
Yeah, thank really. You for for giving me the opportunity to talk about it. When I think about design, I think about people, and people are on a wide range of spectrum of abilities and background and perspectives and skill sets. And I just think about our whole goal is understanding learners and thinking, remembering that we're teaching people. And this could help us do that much better.
Yeah.
Potentially.
And for me, of course, we have the 5 moments of need framework, right? And so learning is a means to an end in our world. Learning is a means to enable effective performance. So what are the barriers to effective performance? What are the challenges to enabling effective performance? How do we use AI technology to remove those barriers and to solve those challenges? Because I'll tell you, as we turn to human performance and enabling more effective performance, that's why organizations hire us. That's why we exist. It's not to develop training, not to develop learning. It's to develop those things. Anything that we develop is to then bring about more effective performance, enabling people to do their work in the most powerful, effective ways, and to do it, you know, avoiding harming anyone.
Right.
Anything, right? And so that's what we've got to figure out. And we need to turn our attention, it seems to me, to performance and to job performance and be looking for those barriers and those challenges and figure our way through it.
Yeah. And I think a big part of this is including folks in that process, right? Yes. I can't make those decisions for those people. You have to have those individuals involved in your design processes when you're putting these things together. I can't speak to these barriers. So one of the things that the book that I'm working on is about, it's really more of a movement, but it's taking things that we know about universal design. Okay, yes, universal design is I give people options, right? I remove barriers. And then we think about accessibility and making accommodations, because you can't remove every barrier. If you make something for everyone, it's not for anyone. So you have to give people options and you have to make accommodations. And then you get into things like DEI, right? And thinking about diversity and culture and background and things that are just underrepresented across the board, right? And accessibility and people with disabilities, that's part of DEI. People can use DEIA and JEDI and all those things and belonging and all of these pieces. It all gets back to who are we trying to help? We're trying to help people, right? And you have to know about all those different perspectives. And if we think about AI and the role that AI plays in it, AI can help algorithm us through different ideas and options and ways to get information to people. But we can't forget the human element of all of this. Right. Because people will get burnout on AI just like they get burnout on everything else. I get tired of talking to computers, right? Sometimes I want a person. And so I don't think that's going to be any different with AI, but I do think AI can help us solve a lot of those problems.
Yep. It sure can. Thank you. Chris, do you have anything?
No, I think this has been a remarkable conversation, Sarah. It's been really great to just hear your perspective on this. You said in one of our earlier meetings, you said that you feel like the majority of what you do is talk people out of writing courses. And I think it gets down to the heart of how you're seeing the advantages, the strengths of generative AI and how we're going to be able to leverage those as long as we can get away from the old way of thinking about it, right? So that's the big challenge. And you've done a remarkable job of drawing some lines around that today with us.
Yeah, it just reminds me that I'm a nerd first. I'm a technology nerd first, but all of that is always a means to an end, a means to connecting with people and helping people.
Thank you for your help today, for your insight, your experience. So grateful that you would take time to share these insights. Just talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm always happy to talk about the work that we're doing, and I always have thoughts about something. So thanks for allowing me some soapbox time today. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this episode of the 5 Moments of Need AI Matters podcast series. We look forward to future conversations about how to best put the 5 Moments of Need into practice with artificial intelligence. We welcome your feedback and can be reached on LinkedIn at the 5 Moments of Need or on our website, www.5momentsofneed.com. We hope you're finding these helpful and that you'll subscribe for future episodes. Have a great day, friends.